Hey everybody, you're watching the Comedy at the Carlson cast. We got a big show lined up for you today. I'm your host, that's me, Vinny Paulino.
That it is.
And my co-host, back down into his hole, it's Brian Chabal.
Vancouver.
Ross Johnson isn't here today, he's at some nerd thing. Don't know what's going on there. And Cam Tiller's here, so we're excited about that. And our special guest, Dave Koechner. So here we are, back at the Comedy at the Carlson cast, located inside of the greatest comedy club in the known world, Comedy at the Carlson.
And many other worlds.
Many other worlds.
The universe.
Well, I just realized I didn't play the theme song at the start of this, but you know what? That's on me today, folks. All you heard was my voice and video. I'll fix it for the audio version.
That should be enough for you.
I might remember to turn it down.
Well, that's good. That's good, Cam. So it's a big show today. Dave Koechner's here. The guy is television, movie star, alumnus of Second City.
Humanitarian.
Cast member of Saturday Night Live, one of the sketch team members of the Conan O'Brien show.
Yeah.
The guy has done a lot, and he's got a lot of energy, and I'm very excited to have him in studio to talk to him. But before we go too far, let's take care of all of our obligations. Shall we, Brian?
We shall.
All right. Ladies and hit my screen, Cam. Sapori Cafe Catering, baby.
Oh, the sponsors. I thought you meant our marital obligations, and I thought that wasn't going to be appropriate.
We were both just going to go home and talk to our wives quickly?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, all right. You're an idiot.
Let's just do the sponsor.
Sapori Cafe Catering, one of the best places in town for lunch, located inside the Powers Building atrium. They could also cater your very special event. Find them on Facebook or Instagram at Sapori Rochester. Also, you can get them, call Chef Joe personally, 585-704-7291. If you want to have them come cater something for you. They are delish.
They are. I wonder if they could just cater like just me by myself.
They could probably do that. I think you could order them on Grubhub too.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Three Heads Brewing. You had a blast at the Three Heads Halloween party.
I did.
And your wife's sister.
The Wonder Twins.
Yeah.
We made the finals of the contest.
That's
the
great. Contest. But you dressed like your brother and sister.
Yeah, we took them off when we got home.
I mean,
we didn't leave
them
on. That would have been really weird.
If you didn't, should have filmed it.
Yeah.
That would be one interesting,
go viral.
Awful adult video. Threeheadsbrewery.com. I'm sure that Jeff Dale is thrilled that we're talking about that while we're doing the plug.
He loved my costume.
I'm sure he did. I saw Jeff the night after. Boy, did we laugh at you two.
Yeah.
Iron Smoke Whiskey. What can I say enough about Iron Smoke Whiskey? It's delicious, available in two varieties, Applewood Smoke Whiskey and Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey. So Thanksgiving's coming up. Why bring a pie to the party? Bring a bottle of Apple Pie Whiskey. Yep. Be a real American.
Speed up that argument with your racist uncle.
That's it.
Yep.
That's how you celebrate Thanksgiving, Iron Smoke Whiskey. So good job, Cam. Thank you, buddy. We are moving right along here because Dave Koechner is going to be in just a few minutes. But we do have someone special joining us in studio tonight. From tonight's show in the Rickles Room, part of the Showmageddon comedy series, Sean Day from The Misfortunates. Hey, Sean.
Hey.
You even got some applause.
Yeah, oh, that was nice.
That was Cam and Brian clapping for you. I hope you feel
and
good
me
about that.
Under the camera as well.
Yeah, I don't think I gave you anything there, Sean.
That's fair.
But I love you, so it's really nice to see you. You were a finalist in the Funniest Person in Rochester contest, up-and-coming comic. Folks have seen you host some shows here. You've performed on some shows. I believe you and I did that weekend with Gilbert Gottfried together.
We did,
That's right, and you forgot to thank me at the end of every show.
I was going to say, I didn't mention you once besides bringing you on stage.
I remember that. Good job.
That's why I didn't get applause today.
That's the other way in which Vinny is like an elephant, in that he never forgets.
You know, I wouldn't have forgot either, you know?
Relax. I'm just teasing you, pal.
I know.
Pop up the thing on the screen for The Misfortunates, would you, Cam? Check this show out tonight. Sean Day, Sam Bloomquist, Cara Malley, and John Mungovan.
There's also Tori Hozier. He was not included on the poster because John's an idiot.
Ah, okay. Duly noted. Tori Hozier's going to be there as well. It's tonight, November 2nd at 8 p.m. in the Rickles Room. So, folks, you get your tickets. They're $10 at the door. They're also available on now at carlsoncomedy.com. And all of these folks in Showmageddon were tasked with making a creative showcase. They had to come up with something to make it a little bit different.
A concept.
We didn't want just the standard comedy showcases because, frankly, they're done to death.
Yeah.
We want to create something new, like a like a spectacle that the audiences can get behind and enjoy. So can you please explain to me and the audience what makes The Misfortunate so fun and different?
All right. Well, you know, first of all, we're, you know, we decided to have some really funny comedians on and do their own material. I know there's a lot of there's a lot of other shows where they did other people's material.
There was one, and that was Cam's, and now you're just trying to start trouble with them. Cam's going to fly off the switcher and just beat you with a bat.
I know he's behind the wall.
I don't like this guest.
Yeah, I don't like him either right now.
You know, we don't have Q&As at the end of ours, but we do have
shade.
We do, yeah.
I'm like, go and tell me about your show, and he's coming here. Let me tell you what we're not doing.
Yeah,
do you know anybody else?
I know who's watching this. I know who's going to be watching this. So I just want to start shit with everybody.
Tiger is not going to watch.
100% he's going to watch this. But anyways, so what we have is we have all the comics. We all do 10 minutes up front, and then after we do our 10 minutes, we spin a wheel, and on that wheel we have like different. Kind of categories, like, you know, one of them is impressions of the other comedians.
Oh, dear God.
Do that. One is like an embarrassing story. Then we had like some improv-y type stuff.
Interesting.
So we do that.
So everyone's going to have to spin the wheel, eh?
Yeah. And then so some of them suck. Some of the things on the wheel kind of suck. But then, you know, we have to deal with that. One of them is Roast the Host, which is John Mungovan, and I'm kind of hoping I land on that.
Can I spin the wheel?
Yeah, have at it.
I just might want to. Yeah. I just might want to. So this sounds like a lot of fun. Tickets are $10 at the door. You're going to see arguably five of the funniest up-and-coming comics.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
I really can't argue with the lineup there. They really did a nice job of putting this together. I think Sean, Sam, Kara, Tori.
Yep.
And, you know, I guess John's there, too. But I think it's a good crew.
Yeah, yeah, other than John. Yeah, Kara's pretty great.
Kara's marvelous.
Yeah, she is really good.
I feel like you're going to get a win if you go check this show out tonight. And you're going to see embarrassing stories, possibly them roasting John. Whatever the wheel spins on, lands on, that's what you're going to get.
Is there a dunk tank on the wheel or anything like that?
No.
Bees!
There is a lot of violence. A lot of violence and pain.
I would say they could add a bankrupt thing, but I know all of them, so they already are.
Yeah. That would be redundant.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, dear. All right, Sean, but break a leg tonight, man. I'm really looking forward to the show. Anything else you'd like to say to the audience?
Come out. The first 30 guests, me and Sam Bloomquist, will shotgun a beer with you in the parking lot beforehand. So, you know, don't tell the cops, but
all right, you heard it here first. First 30 guests. Don't do that. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with Dave Koechner. Stay tuned, everybody. So make sure you put them on your calendar. This weekend, we have the amazing Mr. Dave Koechner. Coming up next week, we're excited to have Brad Williams back. Jimmy Schubert will be here November 15th through the 17th. Dr. Dirty John Valby, Thanksgiving Eve Bash, right here November 21st. And Robert Kelly, November 23rd and 24th. Carlos Mencia will be here November 29th through December 1st. Bobby Slade, December 6th through the 9th. The Pitbull returns. So, like I said, you're going to want to get a ticket. So visit carlsoncomedy.com or call 5854-COMEDY for more information. And we hope to see you at a show soon. Don't forget, we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Oh boy, oh boy, after what I would call a very rushed opening segment, we are thrilled to have our guest in studio this morning, Dave Koechner, everybody.
Good morning. Woo! Hello. Why was it rushed?
Well, because we had some technical problems this morning. And so, like, everything got pushed back, and we were just kind of going a little crazy. And now we're calm and relaxed and
up and running.
And we're up and running, and you're here, and we're excited about that.
Nice.
So, four more shows.
What's the cause for excitement?
The hat.
Oh, yeah, the hat. Thanks. Okay.
Fun hats always do.
The ephemera.
Yeah.
I know you're a fan of it.
The boots are pretty exciting.
Those are some epic boots, by the way, I have to say.
Can you see those?
Let's show the boots. Can you, Cam?
Yeah.
There we
go.
It's
Pirauku.
Is that an actual animal?
It's a 20-foot fish out of the Amazon River.
So those are fish shoes?
Fish, yes. I always say it's like if a catfish married an alligator.
Like, it's really creepy looking.
It's 2018. Thing. Anything can happen.
Yeah, you pull it up on your computer. Pirauku. There's an A in there, but you know these days.
Are they like from Brazil?
Probably. I don't know the exact location where they were pulled out of the river.
Yeah.
All I know is that I just saw how much those shoes are going for. First thing I did is type in Pirauku fish, and all these boots came up.
How much were they?
You're doing all right for yourself.
Are they Lucchese's?
I'm just going to say you're doing okay for yourself.
Yeah, I treat myself once a year to a pair of boots. And so I got these this year.
There's one of them right there. Show it on my computer, Cam.
There you go.
It's
almost like a hide.
That's cool.
That's a fish.
Yeah.
That's a fish. That thing's gross.
Yeah. Apparently they kind of hibernate because the Amazon River, you know, will have low seasons.
Yeah.
And so they'll get stuck in a puddle. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of have to hibernate.
They kind of bury in the mud and hang out.
Exactly. Yeah.
They just lay there till it rains?
I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I've done some research, not enough to make it more interesting. So I just like to bring up small facts that I don't really have much information on.
Sure.
And then just kind of introduce it to the conversation, and then hopefully it hits a dead end.
Well, they sound like they deserve to be made into boots. They sound like they got it coming.
It's a good hide. Sometimes people go like, what are those, pineapple?
Pineapple boots.
Yeah,
sure.
They're like paper. They're going to fall apart anytime.
Well, either way, I'm okay with you killing those. So you're a Missouri guy, huh?
That's where I grew up, yep.
Interesting. So Midwest.
Yeah, small town, Tipton, Missouri.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How many people?
Actually, I covered my act. Thanks for watching.
Well, I was there watching.
Yes.
I just want people to come see you.
Yeah, that's
and
nice.
We're just chatting about you.
My whole life, it was 1,999 people, and then for the 1980 census, it jumped up to 2,004, so not a thriving metropolis.
Interesting. Do you still have family there? Do they all
My brother out? Still lives there. He took over my dad's business. My dad was made livestock trailers, specifically for turkeys. I realized over the years that I can't say my dad made turkey coops, because then people think, oh, like for pens in your backyard? Right. Like, they were livestock trailers for turkeys.
They're probably very small. Just little tiny trailers for a turkey.
Right, exactly. Very small turkey trailer.
So that's a lot of metal work. And so your dad was a hands-on kind of guy.
He was a manufacturer, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Not a great welder, but a good engineer. He had a good engineering mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when growing up in Tipton, Missouri, I can't imagine that it was like an entertainment epicenter.
The nearest movie theater was 45 miles away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know,
and that's country miles. That's like an hour and 15 minutes.
No, believe it or not, and thank you for doing your research. A mile's a mile anywhere.
He's so stupid. I love it.
I mean, the amount of time it takes to get there. You're not on the 4-lane, probably.
Well, the cars are slower.
Yeah.
They used to only have Model Ts back in Missouri.
Well, you know, the steam.
The steam.
Yeah, you got to wait for the steam to heat up.
We take the train to Jefferson City, and it's the state capital. There's not a lot of options, and we only had three television stations because I was growing up in the late '60s, early '70s, and three television stations. And my parents were not fans of cable, so we never got it my whole time when I lived there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So like. How were you, like, first exposed to improv or stand-up? How did you come about it?
I was a big fan of Saturday Night Live when it first came on. I would babysit my younger brothers and sisters. My parents would go out dancing because I know they would not have let me watch the show, SNL, and because they wouldn't let us watch Laugh-In.
So we're talking about, like, the start of SNL.
Oh, yeah, 75.
Right on.
Yeah, absolutely. I was 13, and... I remember I knew there because they were doing live promos of the show, and the show was going to be live.
Right.
I thought, oh my God, I can't miss this. Please go dancing.
You know, I envy you for that. I'm going to tell you that right now. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like 13 years old, 1975, when SNL hits the air. That's like the sweet spot.
Yeah.
To really like enjoy that with like just fresh, hopeful eyes.
Yes. And I knew it was something special was about to happen. So, you know, and like that, I didn't grow up with comedy albums in the house because my folks weren't, you know,
were they really religious?
Well, they're very Catholic.
Okay, Catholic.
Very Catholic. Okay. But they wouldn't, yeah, they weren't. My dad was funny. My mom was funny in their own way, but they weren't fans of comedy. Oh, I mean, I would watch Abbott and Costello movies on Saturday afternoons with my dad.
Nobody complained about Abbott and Costello. Come on, Lou, spit it out. Lou,
werewolf!
Where?
No, so I guess that would be my early introduction to comedy, would be that. I do trace it back to that, watching Abbott and Costello movies with my dad on Saturday afternoons, because that's when, you know, you have to watch things then when they were on TV.
That you explains couldn't, so much about you.
Yes.
It really does.
The TV Guide actually was the thing that
was
you
it.
Needed.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It was an expensive magazine.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big subscription.
Yeah, I remember that subscription coming and going in my house.
Ah.
Like, we'd have it for a few months and then wouldn't, and then we'd have it again. And
it was, depending on how work was, huh?
Yep. Yeah. Depending on if they could afford it or
depending
not.
On how things are going down at the mill.
Yep.
Now, why do you say that explains so much?
Well, because you have a very distinct physical style of comedy. You know how to use your body, and maybe you're not running around falling down being ridiculous,
right?
But you're very animated.
Yeah.
And I could definitely see the effect that Abbott and Costello would have on somebody that young,
that
and how
sense.
It just kind of sticks with you.
Sure.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I obviously then became a fan of the older Abbott and Costello stuff. You dig a little bit deeper.
Sure.
And it wouldn't necessarily be available, but of course the old Who's On First sketch,
sure.
The old routine. In high school, they would have one play a year.
Right.
And at that time, you couldn't be in the play until you were a junior or senior. And I secretly wanted to do it. I was always interested in politics. And so I'd kind of decided I was going to be a poli sci major, which I ended up doing.
See, I didn't realize that. You were a poli. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I think that was really a desire to be in front of people, probably. But I, you know, I had no access to how a person goes and becomes that thing.
Except for the politicians who come down
yes.
to town
yeah. well, you,
doing
you,
stump
you know,
speeches.
You always know that,
so
yeah,
you
that's.
You thought that was the best way to get in front of a microphone.
Well, I actually had I had an altruistic motive. I wanted to help people. And then until you get to your third year of college, you're like, oh, that's not what this is about. Plus, I'm not going to ever make it in politics, because it's either you have to be very wealthy from a political family, or you're the smartest person in any room you walk into. Those are the things that will propel you into politics, or unless you're a devious motherfucker. So I wasn't any of those things, so I quit going to my classes. And so, you know, you become academically ineligible.
Yes.
And I was, and I thought, oh, my God.
You were kindly asked to leave.
Yeah, my parents are going to kill me. My dad said, well, Dave, I don't know what you want to do, but I don't think you want to go to school. Now, that's the best Cecil Kechner in the business. And I'm the only
Everybody
person.
Does a Cecil Kechner, but that's the best one.
That's the best one. But
mine's a little more nasal.
he said, you know, I bought the car I was driving from him for about $400, I think. It was a Plymouth Grand Fury 2, and bought that from him. And I had three jobs there in Columbia, Missouri, where the university was. And then a friend and I went to, I knew that Second City was where a lot of people from Saturday Night Live came from.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so I went and I went for the weekend and visited a friend and went to the show. Mm-hmm. And then on the way out, I saw, oh my God, they teach classes. That's how people get here. And I had a matchbook. And
then the words of Cecil Kechner popped into my head.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in school, sir.
Nice. Not a bad Kechner.
Thank you.
Not
thank you.
Not a bad one.
So
I do it kind of Jewish, and I don't know why. I don't know why I chose that accent for it, for my Cecil Kechner.
Remember that dead-end stuff we were talking about earlier?
There's a wall. Hey, where'd that wall come from?
Brian.
Ta-da.
So they teach classes.
They teach classes. I had a matchbook and a golf pencil, because you'd fill out, you know, comic cards or your mailing list. And I surreptitiously wrote it down on a matchbook cover inside, because I expected someone to tap me on the shoulder going, why would you write that down? What are you going to do? That's kind of that Tipton mentality of, you know, it's not about dreaming or succeeding or going anywhere in life.
These turkeys need to get out of the road, and we need to build something for them
right.
to ride in.
Yeah. So I then saved my money in Columbia, moved up to Chicago, started taking classes actually at the I.O. first. the Improv Olympic, and then at Second City simultaneously.
Interesting. Yeah. So, like, when you first start taking classes, did you feel you had chops for it immediately?
Yeah, I really did. I was like, cool. Oh yeah, I said, this is home. This is I can do this for sure. I mean, I was always the class clown, right. You know, always trying to, you know, being funny, trying to be funny, blah blah blah. Sure, much of it annoying, but yeah. So you have your outlet, right? As a kid, that's what you do.
Yeah.
It can be very lonely though, being the funny kid in Tipton, Missouri. I can imagine.
I got along with everybody. I mean, sure. I think, you know, there's no cliques because the school's not big.
You don't
enough.
Have enough people.
No. So, but if there were, exactly. Yeah. It's true though. I mean, I graduated with 65.
I graduated with 63.
Yeah, and it wasn't a private school.
No. Yeah. 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 No.
So, you know, the whole entire school was 250 people.
Yeah, one STD would kill everybody.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're wiped out. Yeah. And so, they blame the girl, of course.
Yeah.
So you're at Second City, you're taking classes, and you're loving it. You feel like you're like a fish to water. You're at home. That's an interesting way to put it. What part of it were you really into? Was it the writing? Was it the performing?
The improv.
What got you going?
The improvising. I hate that word. The improvising.
Yeah.
Like when people, you know, back then they go, pretty good improver. I'm like, that's not improver. It's improviser. And I was very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. When you first start improvisation and you really catch the bug, that's all you want to talk about.
Yeah.
What makes it better? How to be better? And, you know, why the theater doesn't work as well as it should and all that stuff. And you just talk improv all the time. And I remember that being, you know, such a big thing. And it's almost like it's a religion.
I was going to say, cult. It's culty.
Yeah,
it's
it really culty. Is.
Yeah, we've noticed.
Yeah. only so you get older and into show business, like, no, it's a tool.
Yeah.
It's part of it. It's not all of it, but, you know, there are still
people.
But
those are the people who didn't start there. Those are the people who are like, oh, I'm going to learn a couple improv skills to get better at what I do. When you get immersed into improv, it's like taking a swim in the deep end.
Yep.
You're just surrounded by it.
And, you know, there's a real prejudice against stand-up.
There is.
Yeah.
And vice versa. But I will say, though, that what I've learned is it's more common that an improviser makes a good stand-up than the other way around. If you started out in stand-up, I think a lot of us don't become great improvisers.
Could be.
But a lot of improvisers become very good stand-ups.
I, you know, it is the thing back then, like, you, if you did improv, you didn't. Like, you do not do stand-up. It was verboten.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as if you wouldn't understand how to ever go back. Like, well, so if you did something by yourself, now hold on. It's like, if you're going to go play basketball and bring a football along. How would you possibly know what court you're on? It's ridiculous, really.
It's you know, team sport versus golf, you know?
Right, but it just makes you sharper. I mean, the only difference, you know, same thing is, you know, the way I describe the difference on an improv group or team, your relationship is with your partner, and in stand-up, your relationship is with the audience. That's that's your partner. You know, and so, you know, the fallacy that you wouldn't be able to do one or the other and discern, what am I doing now? Stand-up or improv? I really wish I had done stand-up back in Chicago.
So you never attempted it then, huh?
No, never did. Never did. I would do character pieces. And same when I was in L.A. all those
years. Like monologues as characters?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I didn't start doing stand-up until about 8 years ago.
Wow, really?
We're going to get there.
Right.
We're going to talk about stand-up in a little bit because that's fascinating to me.
I'm not a purist, and any stand-up purist go, oh, it's the same thing.
Right.
You get like, he's not doing stand-up. Like, no, I'm doing entertainment. And there are many different forms of stand-up. It doesn't have to be just set up punchline. And everybody can enjoy or love, you know, different. There's so many different styles.
The old adage, it's like ice cream, lots of different flavors.
Yeah.
Lots of different flavors.
So anyway, that's how I started improv. And then Second City, got hired by Second City, a touring company, then a company, and then got hired by Saturday Night Live, and then unhired. And then
you did one season on Saturday Night Live.
Now,
you were a cast member and a writer?
Yeah.
And you were on one of my favorite sketches ever, to quote, good old, that Bill Blasky.
Bill Brasky.
Brasky, that's right.
Yeah.
Bill Brasky is the son of a bitch. I know Bill Brasky. Yeah, those were fun. And they were so confusing to Lauren because we'd be having a hoot doing it at the table read. And Lauren just look around confused, like, why are people laughing? I don't get this. What's happening? And that's why they'd always be buried at the last sketch of the show.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I feel like it's one of those silly things that really there is no joke there other than this is how these assholes are in general.
Yeah, yeah, they admire the worst qualities in other humans.
Yeah. It's true. Salespeople do.
Yes.
He robbed everybody at that orphanage. They bought all those non-fireproof blankets.
A hell of a salesman.
Yeah. So when you go to SNL and you have, like, you know, such an improv background, Second City, obviously that makes you very desirable to them. And when you get into that culture, what is the SNL culture like as opposed to, like, the Second City culture?
Well, that's probably why it didn't work out for me. I was antithetical to the idea that you must succeed personally at all cost. I was a team player. I'm like, let's all, you know, let's all get something on the air. It's incredible to me how poorly it is really constructed in that it is not set up to help you succeed. No one's there to help you.
It's
either sink or swim. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be. It's ridiculous, really. And there are sketches that will kill 1 week at the table, and maybe they get cut for who knows what reason. And the set gets built and all that stuff, and then it just goes away. You can never resubmit the sketch until another year or so, because if it doesn't get a laugh at the table read, that's it. It's so fucking ridiculous.
That is kind of interesting.
It's really run in a weird, odd way. And to me, I'm like, why wouldn't you put all this stuff up live somewhere else, work on the sketch, make sure you know it's going to work, and then let it kill on air? You're like, why wouldn't you be doing a workshop in town all the time? Like, you'd have the SNL theater, let's say.
It would make so much money if they had an SNL theater.
Wouldn't it? And that way they could actually...
I can't imagine, like, what a tourist thing that would be.
Oh, my God. There you go. And then you'd have different companies, right? You know, you'd have the, the smaller cabaret.
Sure.
Like here, right? You've got the Rickles room and you've got the main room, you know, where people can gain experience.
Yeah. But
so, but
maybe they just don't want to do it because Second City does it, you think?
But this is New York. You're not cannibalizing anybody.
I'm just saying
this would be for the players.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I understand. Yeah.
And then you'd work out, I would work it out all summer long. And typically you have your summer off, which is fun, or, you know, if you get famous, you can go to a movie, whatever. But then anyone could work sketches, and then they could then cultivate, you know, a great crop of players or not. Those things all tend to be, you know, so political and all that stuff that, you know, some people are going to fall through the cracks or whatever. But it gives them another performance opportunity. Oh, but also, mostly, it gives you an opportunity to see if something's going to work.
You make way too much sense this morning.
Yeah.
Way too much sense. Yeah.
Let's all move to New York and start it. I'm sure lawyers won't be a problem.
I think it's got to be, like, summed up, though, to Lauren just being, like, a TV producer and having that mindset, you would think.
I guess. And whatever worked the first 5 years for him. Like, you know, pit people against each other.
Shots fired.
Yeah. And let them go.
Yeah,
and but it also it's a you know, microcosm of show business. You've got to make it, whatever it takes. But I, you know, to me, I was a little bit too nice, and I was a bit at the same time. I don't want to say kind of class, but I don't mean that word. I meant my mind's failing me right now. But I was oppositional to a lot of stuff. Like, they'd ask me to do a Gerald talk show, and I would say, no, that's what's wrong with this show. There's too many talk shows. We need more sketches.
Another talk show.
Yeah, they weren't asking me. That's what I didn't realize. How about a Gerald talk show? I was like, no, we need more sketches. They're not asking you, dumbass. They were telling you. Yeah, do this.
How long after you left did that dawn on you? Did you realize it then, or did you even go, oh, I should have just done
that? Oh, that summer. That June, it was an article in the New York Post that I was going to be let go. And I'm like, what? And so myself and Nancy Wells, and when Mark McKinney was on the bubble too, Nancy Wells.
Steve. And that blows my mind that Mark McKinney would be on the bubble with the relationship he had with Lauren.
Well, that's why
forever.
He was kept.
Yeah.
You know, he'd been with Lauren for years and he just had a baby. And so I think Lauren could only protect one pawn, because it wasn't Lauren's. Lauren did not want to get rid of me. It was NBC West Coast. It was the first year that Mad TV was on the air, and Howard Stern had his late night show too. So it was the only time there was real comedy competition at night at that hour with Saturday Night Live.
Right.
So had there not been, West Coast wouldn't have had as much power to say, we want these guys off.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Don Ohlmeyer apparently didn't like the fops. He thought they were gay or something. That's what I was told. But, you know, everybody loses their job in show business at some point.
Absolutely.
Except Lorne Michaels.
Well, he did, but then he came right back.
Well, he left.
Oh, yeah. That, yeah.
On purpose,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
And see, that was the brilliant move for him just to leave because who would go to Ebersol? Was it Dick Ebersol who ran it? And Ebersol did not go well. And they're like, please come back, Lauren. And now they're never going to let him walk away.
Oh, no, no. And why would he? He's make too much money. Plus, he owns Late Night. You know, he's got Fallon and he's got Seth Meyers. So I'm not talking shit on the guy at all.
I don't think you were. Yeah, no. I don't think you were.
Give myself, exclude myself from all shows.
Cam, remind me to add into the hashtags and the keywords to the show, not talking shit about Lauren Michaels.
Should we all make a statement to camera right now?
Right. We'll pick it up.
Just don't let me forget that. It's important.
That's great.
We do not endorse any of this, Lauren. We're very sorry.
Yeah.
Ah, man.
But anyway, there's a million ways to make it in show business.
Sure. But, I mean...
And you found a couple.
You found a couple, yeah.
That SNL time, I mean, had to be very valuable. Obviously, you ended up being friends with Will Ferrell, but you were really close with Adam McKay.
Yeah, McKay and I, we met in 1990 or 91 in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he was at the Improv Olympic, where I was as well. Mm-hmm. And then, we got to know each other and enjoyed each other's politics and... love of comedy. We both studied with Del Close, so same pedigree, really. That worked out.
Yeah. But he's doing pretty good for himself. He's directing like a lunatic. Didn't he do Ant-Man? Did he do a Marvel movie?
No.
Who directed Ant-Man?
I think McKay may have helped write the first one or something.
Oh, that's right. He was involved in it. Forgive me.
Yeah.
But I mean, he directed the Anchorman movies. Did he do Talladega Nights? He did a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah. And then now he's transitioned. He did. He won an Oscar for The Big Short.
What a great movie that was.
Yeah, yeah. And then now he's got the new Dick Cheney movie coming out. I forget the name of it, but it's coming out soon.
Let's play an improv game. What should be the name of Dick Cheney's movie, political science major?
Old Dick, shot in the face. Yeah. Hunting accident.
I hope that's at least a good solid 20 minutes of the movie.
He can just go, should we cover this up?
Slow-mo replays of the guy getting shot in the face.
Oh, beautiful.
But Christian Bale, right? That guy's amazing.
I didn't even know there was a Dick Cheney movie coming out.
So I didn't know Christian Bale had anything to do with it. I heard there was a Dick Cheney movie coming out.
I can't think of a grumpier person to play a grumpier person. That's pretty good casting.
Well, is he grumpy? I don't know.
There's just that big...
The one legendary explosion?
Yeah.
Well, here's what happened, though. This guy's a concentrated actor, right? He's concentrating.
Let's talk about it.
And they've got... you're there to rehearse or do whatever, and the DP is lighting things. Like, well, not now.
Right.
Not now. And here's a guy. The reason he's so good, right, is because he's very focused. You don't get a guy that hits it out of the park consistently, right? He's a brilliant actor.
Agreed.
And there takes a bit of a focus to do that. So someone's doing lighting or whatever and is, taking away his focus during the rehearsal process. They're not shooting. And he's basically only asking them to stop. Now, the thing I'd heard is this guy had done it several times.
Gotcha.
And then Ben asked, please don't do it now. Basically, in showbiz, hold the work.
Right.
The actors have the stage now. All right? We're going to give you the room when we're done here. Now, in comedies, obviously, it's much lighter, the mood. But I can imagine if you're concentrating on your performance and you put hours and hours and hours and hours and hours into your, before you even do the performance, and now you got some guy fucking around while you're trying to goddamn put it together. Stop it!
Yes, sir.
I can see why the guy would get hot. So then he gets his reputation.
I'm going to take back my comment. My comment because in my own mind, as you were talking, I realized I was thinking about Russell Crowe.
Oh!
I realized I was thinking of Russell Crowe.
Oh! I was just going to say, didn't he smack somebody with a phone? And then I thought, that was Russell Crowe.
And that's, so I think that's an interesting point. And you've been in some serious, legit movies. You are in one of the coolest movies that if you haven't seen it, go check it out, Wag the Dog.
Oh, yeah, that was my first job.
That was your first movie?
Yeah, first movie.
God, and, that's bonkers.
Yeah. I don't know if I met Harlan for the first time there, or he and I had met the year before in Montreal, but Harlan's one of my favorite people.
Wow.
God, he's so fucking funny.
That's
Harlan and I will text. God, where's my phone? I'll read you Harlan's last text.
Please do.
Let's see here.
For those of you who don't know
who Hey, guy, about, Harlan Williams.
Harlan Williams.
What's going on, guy? I love him so much. Where's Harlan?
Let's see what Harlan's up to these days. Can you send him a video message for me, maybe?
Oh my God.
We've done that a few times. Vince Vaughn got a video message for me once.
Who did?
I'm sure it made his morning. Vince Vaughn. Steve Byrne helped me out.
Right. He did not reply, by the way.
Yeah, he did not reply.
Here's Harlan. Just out of nowhere, October 28th. Do you wear dentures? If so, could I borrow for a corn roast this weekend?
All right. All right.
In an effort to get ahead of the holiday rush for me and my kids, we'd love to secure a family pack for the Carumpus on Ice tickets before all the good seats are sold out. Any way to help? Oh, just like, what the fuck are you talking about? I love him. I love him.
That's hysterical. So,
someone called me a fart knocker yesterday. You still have friends that take care of problems? Here's another one.
Is he attempting to order a hit? Is that the question?
Here's another one.
Or maybe he wants to fix his fart knocking problem.
It sounds like he's ordering a hit.
Gonna need your house tonight for a swingers event. Be out by 7. Just a heads up. Not asking. Me and my ice partner, Ludwig, are performing our future skating routine tonight at the Pickwick Arena. Please drop by with the kids if you can fit it in. I think you'll thoroughly enjoy it. I just love him.
I'm crying right now.
He seems to be a big fan of ice skating.
Yeah. Do you have an extra pair of briefs I can borrow for the weekend?
Okay, I got a back.
And he doesn't have wife and kids. He invites me to all his parties, and they'll all be like, you know, holiday parties, like 4th of July, whatever.
Okay.
No kids, because he doesn't have kids. He's got a great place, great view, top of the Hollywood Hills. But it's like, Harlan, I can't come because I'll be hanging out with my family today. Okay, guy, easy.
That's a pretty good invitation.
Not a bad Harlan. But I love Harlan. Just, you know, we had the opportunity to hang out a couple times. Like, we'd both be in Vancouver doing different movies and get to hang out at night. It just it makes me laugh so hard.
Those are the best people, aren't
they? Oh, I love it.
I wish I had a couple in my life.
Yeah.
Great if I had people who made me laugh or entertain me.
He's always fucking with you. Hey, guy, what's going on? Oh,
so love him. How did SNL tell you you got fired, by the way? Sorry to go back to negative stuff.
After there was a thing in the New York Post, I contacted the office, Lawrence Robin, like, what's going on? And, you know, said, you know, can I come in and talk? And I talked to one of the NBC executives first, and she said it was kind of out of her hands and a West Coast decision. Then Adam McKay and Tom Giannis had spoken on my behalf, going, you know, hey, what's going on? Why wouldn't you bring Kechner back? I had a very successful season. It was really weird.
Yeah, you were on a lot for being a first-year guy.
I have enough that I could make a best of, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing to me, it was like, well, you know, performance-wise, like, I killed it. I did 3 or 4 political impressions. I did some other impressions, did some characters that were hits on the show. So it was really odd. But I had talked shit on another guy, and I'm not going to say his name to you guys. And I think that had something to do with my demise.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
And that it's what we learned today.
Yeah.
You go to SNL, do whatever they ask you to do.
Yes.
And
don't talk shit.
And laugh at everything everybody else does at the table read. That way everyone laughs at your stuff.
But, you know, also, to me, I was planning only to be there 3 years anyway. That was my design. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? The show is over. In my mind, I was like, they should have put it down a long time ago before I even got there. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to stay here 3 years and leave. You get a 6-year contract. I thought, I'm going to do 3 years and go. That was my plan. But, you know, sometimes the universe works, and I got what I wanted.
And you're on, and you're off.
You
ended up working with Conan after that, didn't you?
No, I did a couple sketches.
Just a couple sketches.
Through the year. Lauren wanted to keep me in his fold, so he suggested I become an ensemble player at Conan. And there wasn't such a position. And, you know, I remember I was out one night with Andy Richter, who I'd been friends with since 89.
A happy late birthday to you, Andy, by the way.
Yes. Oh, you're right. The 28th.
Yeah.
Ah,
shit. I missed it. Oh, well. I remember we were out one night. It's me and Andy and Conan, and there's some event or something. And Conan said, hey, listen, Dave, you know, I love your work and everything. But by the way, we don't have a budget for it. I don't know how we get the money. Like, where that's supposed to come from. And I said, like, position really doesn't exist. I'm like, yeah, I always thought it was weird that Lauren was going to, maybe you'll just be hired by Conan to be a featured player. I'm like, well, that That doesn't, that's no such position exists.
Andy Richter was probably like, what?
No, Andy would have loved it. But no, I did some bits with, because I was friends with tons of the writers from the early Conan days, because they were all my improv buddies back in Chicago, and a bunch of those guys ended up getting hired as writers on Conan's show. So, things worked out. I mean, it hurt like fuck, but, you know, things were supposed to happen for a reason, and I moved out to L.A. 6 months later, I meet my wife. And, I always worked. It was fun. My meeting I had with Lauren, he said, Dave, you're an artist. Don't change that. So apparently, and I remember
Thanks
thinking in my
notes.
Head, so there's not room for artists here on your show. Okay. But he said, you've already shown up on the radar. You'll be fine.
maybe you should have been a little artsy on that talk show sketch.
Yeah, no
huh?
shit. No
that
shit.
Sounds like the speech you give a puppy as you leave it in the
I
field
know.
Somewhere.
You'll be fine. But he was right.
You have good instincts.
Look at all this
you'll
room
be
to
fine.
Play.
Yeah. Here's the thing: he was right. I moved to LA. Yeah. I got a holding deal right away. I've never stopped working. So, it would have made a difference had I stayed on for 3 years. Yes. You know, you'd had a bigger jump start. Six years, even bigger, right?
Yeah.
But things are meant to be the way they're meant to be.
So acting now, you're in like everything all the time.
I've been very fortunate, yeah.
You really are. Like it's amazing how often you pop up. And every time, nobody ever gets sick of you. That's the beautiful
nice.
Thing. Every time you pop up, everybody's like, hey, it's Dave Koechner! And everybody's happy.
That's nice.
Like it's not, that guy again.
Yeah.
And
that tried old hack.
I'm telling you, man. You
not,
got
like,
something
not like
for
that
yourself.
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. He's a wonderful human being, by the way.
And just walking around holding a rubber baby. Ain't going to get you far.
Oh, is that on...
That Marine movie.
Oh, right.
That one with the sniper one. That drove me crazy.
Yeah. Everyone apparently drove everyone crazy. It's in the house, right?
Yeah, he's holding a rubber baby. Yeah. And like he's acting his balls off having this intense scene. But it's like the thing's like a Betsy Wetsy.
Yeah. And I that must have been in the book. Or something.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was a baby that day, but you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And so it's Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And my guess is Clint was, my guess is the baby wasn't working that day.
Get the rubber one.
Get the rubber one, we'll be fine.
Right on. So you're doing, you've done a ton of movies.
Yeah.
You do movies with your pals, and they're big hits.
Yeah.
Obviously. And you go back to L.A., you're doing everything that you're doing. How the hell do you decide to start doing stand-up?
Well, I'll tell you. After 2008, when the market crashed, usually it doesn't affect Hollywood for a couple years, right? And I was actually, my agent said, hey, listen, there's this movie called Horrible Bosses. There's a couple of boss roles. Just kind of, tell us which one you're interested in. I'm like, okay, great. And then read the script, blah, blah, and then time goes by. It's like, what happened? Colin Farrell and Kevin Spacey took those parts. I was like, what? So this is 2010 or so, and I realized then, I was like, oh fuck, stars are taking jobs I would normally get, which means they must have three houses. And
I'm pretty sure Kevin Spacey would take the parts you get now, too.
I'm pretty sure. I think he's done.
Yeah.
He is done for
Shoes
good.
Shoes on the other foot now,
isn't
it, Spacey?
He is done for good, that
the
bastard.
Old picker eel shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah.
I got nothing. Whatever that
but,
thing is.
So at that point, I realized, this could get bumpy. So, and I had five kids.
Yeah.
And so I called my agent. I said, can you get me on the road? Because I'd always done live. Always have. I had a show for years at Largo called The Naked Trucker T-Bone Show. And so...
That was also on Comedy Central.
Yes, so. Yes. Mm-hmm. Done wrong. They forced us to make it a sketch show, which was not the way we did our show. Mm-hmm. And so what should have happened was they should have asked us how we wanted to do it. But their model was Chappelle and Mencia. Mm-hmm. And so they said, you'll set it up and then we'll throw the sketch and you will come back to home base. That was the model they knew, and that did not work for our show at all. Plus, I kept telling them, don't make this seem like blue collar comedy. Don't advertise it that way. And the executive kept calling it smart dumb humor. And I'm like, don't fucking say that. It was smart
dumb humor.
Yeah, because the character, my character, knew who Noam Chomsky was, right?
Right.
He could quote Chaucer. So he's much smarter than you think.
Right.
But that's the only way they could think of it. And then they sold it as not blue collar. They didn't do it. They said roadhouse comedy. Like, you fucking assholes. It's nothing. It's neither. Yeah. It's betwixt between. We should have been paired with Colbert or something like that. But no, the way they advertised it made it seem like it's blue-collar comedy. So those people were disappointed. And anyone who was watching Colbert wouldn't watch our show. Because, like, what's this hillbilly shit? But, you know.
And even though, like, Colbert was doing, playing a character who was dumb, being very smart about it.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. So weird. That was too bad. Anyway, but anyway, so I had tons of character pieces. So my first hour of stand-up was I did five different characters. I had five different changes on stage. I had a rack of clothes, wigs, all this shit, and I would change, you know, I'd cover with jokes or whatever, and I would change into character pieces and then do character pieces. So people in comedy clubs were going like, what the fuck is going on here? Because, you know, they're not expecting a one-man show.
Right, yeah. Right.
So, you know, if you eventually, you figure it out. But I'd call, like, let me go back to my story. I'm sorry. Called my agent and said, can you get me on the road? And she came back with 11 gigs as a headliner the next week. Because, you know, I had enough of a name. And that, I've been performing for 30 years. And so at that point, I had 3 months before my first gig.
Okay.
So I had time to put an act together. I did a residency at UCB where I had an hour every, I forget what it was, if it was a Friday night or a Saturday night, for an hour. And so, you know, you could work it out. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because obviously you have the chops, you have the stage skill, you have... You know, not you don't have the nerves that people have stepping on stage to stand up the first time, and you're going up doing characters, which is not the typical way people start doing stand up.
Right.
So, like, at what point did you decide that I need to evolve a little bit and kind of move towards the more stand up stuff? Because I watched you last night, and it was enjoyable as hell.
Oh, good.
It was
Thank
a very different type of show. And for those of you watching this, reminder, there's four more shows, two tonight, two tomorrow. You get your tickets, call 585-4-COMEDY or visit carlsoncomedy.com. Now that we got that out of the way, it's an awesome show. And it is very out of the box for stand-up. But in ways, it's also great stand-up.
Yeah, it's still
it's
definitely
witty and
stand-up.
It's smart.
Yeah.
And for someone who started off 8 years into it, you're light years ahead of somebody 8 years into stand-up.
Well, I better be.
You damn well better be.
Better be, yeah. So
you damn well better
be. I know that I hope to tape a special in the first quarter of the next year. And I know because people are coming thinking, what's he going to do? Champ Kind for an hour? Is he going to do Todd Packer? What, am I just going to hear showbiz stories?
Yeah.
Which I'm sure people would love to hear, but I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather do comedy. But it evolves, you know, because you're always working out new material, even if you have your act. And then, you know, you'll think about different bits and you put it up and then you put it up in town, then that works. And then you just find new tags and then it, whatever. But it's fortunate that I get to do so many different things, TV and movies and animation and voiceover and all that stuff. But it does not allow me as much time as I wish I could afford just devoted to stand-up.
Who, like, in terms of stand-up itself, like, you seem like you weren't really into it. You were more into the improv stuff. Were there comedians that you liked?
Did you get
into stand-up?
Sure. Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That was my early hero. Yeah. Steve Martin, George Carlin. I wasn't a comedy nerd in that, and I don't mean that as a bad way. I wish I was. I wish I had, you know, 10 comedy albums growing up. I had one. Only Steve Martin. And it was an 8-track tape.
Interesting.
So you listen to it in your Camaro?
This is before I had a car.
And a $400 car I had from Cecil.
I had Steve Martin's Wild and Crazy Guy.
Yeah.
On 8-track. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Click clunk. People who don't even know what an 8-track is.
I remember my parents had one car with an 8-track. I very vaguely remember the 8-track. I remember a Journey 8-track.
Nice.
That's about hits. All I recall.
So that was my, you know, stand-up. And then later you start getting into all the greats. Because I was more of an SNL type guy,
right?
I wasn't listening to stand-up as much. But, you know, as you get into it, you know, realize Richard Pryor is the king. And
no argument.
Just, yeah. That special of him live and smoking is just incredible.
It's if you haven't watched it, folks, do yourself a favor and watch a little Richard Pryor. Just take a day and throw some Richard Pryor specials on.
Yeah, people. I mean, that first one, recorded, was it at the Improv?
Not the Sunset Strip one we're talking about.
No. The earliest one.
The earliest one was...
Live and Smokin'.
I'm trying to... Was that the first one? I thought that was the second one.
He's in a tiny club.
Okay.
Yeah. He talks about sucking cock. He talks about, I haven't done cocaine for 2 days, and this is really hard for me. The audience is quiet, and they don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
But he does Mudbone and a heroin... A junkie. It's amazing. It's just incredible.
I think that trend of trying to get the small club vibe into like specials and stuff now is something that everybody's trying to get back to.
Oh, are they? Mm-hmm. That's cool. I don't watch enough stand-up to...
Yeah. Sure. Chappelle did one from... where did he do his? It was at the Comedy Store, I think, in like the small room at the Comedy
yeah,
Store.
Yeah,
okay.
And then he did... Sarah Silverman did one with, I think, a room of 50 people.
Oh, wow.
And then there's that Daniel Gloss, is that his name? Has a Netflix special where I don't think he even has an audience.
Todd Glass or Daniel Gloss?
Daniel Gloss.
Okay.
I think. A Netflix special. I just saw it the other day. I was watching parts of it. But
well, yeah, it's time to be innovative.
Amazing. Everybody thinks they're innovative, but now they're going backwards towards prior.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. So 4 more shows this weekend. And I have to ask you this question because it's a dumb one, but it's one I got to know. What is the thing that gets yelled at you the most in public?
Used to always be whammy.
Uh-huh.
But more recently, because people are watching The Office, it's Todd Packer.
Okay.
It's the craziest.
So we have a text line open.
Oh, nice.
Basically, people have been just texting us quotes from the morning. And one of the quotes...
Not really questions.
Well, one of them...
How about this? Make him do this. Yeah. Make him do that.
And I'm not going to...
Dance
not,
for me.
You can. Listen, I don't care.
I'm not going to do
Look,
that.
Look, here's the thing. I will never run away from, you know, people say, don't you get tired of it? They're like, no, it'd be much worse if it didn't happen.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. One question from Sally. Does Dave still have a love bump on his ding-dong?
That's a Todd Packer line.
That's a Todd Packer
yes.
line.
Mm-hmm. No, Dave Koechner doesn't.
Great.
Todd Packer, I'm sure, has a polluted penis.
It's
Dave
vile.
Koechner never even got herpes.
It's like the Hulk Hogan line where he says, "Terry in that trial, you know, the wrestler, Terry Bollea has a normal penis. Hulk Hogan has a 10-inch penis. I don't have a 10-inch penis. Hulk Hogan does."
Who says that?
Hulk Hogan said it on the stand, I believe.
On the wood stand, yeah.
Wow. 10 inches.
That's... No, his character has a 10-inch penis.
Ah!
He said, I don't in real life, my character.
Okay.
Does.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. It's an interesting way to take this, Brian. I feel like you've really added a lot to the conversation.
It's two guys with rumors about their penises.
There you go.
All right.
It's related.
So, I got to tell you, I am honored to meet you. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
No, it really has. I enjoyed doing the show with you last night, and I'm looking forward to 4 more this weekend.
Yeah,
so,
we'll have some fun.
If you at home, if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, do it. 5854Comedy, visit carlsoncomedy.com, and you can follow at David Koechner on Twitter, find him on Instagram, all of those good things. What's next? You got anything big coming on?
I'm doing a bunch of Goldbergs this fall, and then there's a spinoff series called Schooled, and so I'm doing a couple of those. And then pilot season comes up, and so, you know, there's a couple of things percolating there.
Interesting. Do you have any roles open for a fat friend with expressive eyes who falls down a lot?
Of course. Well, if I was the guy that hired, I'm looking to get hired, so that's the thing. Actors typically can't get other actors work.
Well, when you start talking about pilot season,
there
you know, I get a little excited
over
here.
Yeah, but no, I want to do a special, and I've got a bunch of movies half written. It's like, just fucking finish these. What do you just come on, man? You know, but it takes time and energy.
Finishing's the hardest part.
Yeah, finishing's always the hardest, right?
Yeah.
So I've got some other show ideas. So we'll see.
Awesome.
I'm very blessed in that I don't lack for work. So
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, 5 kids to feed. You're a busy man.
Yeah. My oldest boy got into the American Academy of Dramatic Art. Charlie went and auditioned himself. Didn't ask for help.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only 200 kids in the school. So he got 2 monologues because he decided right before I was going to write the first check for his first year of college. He said, yeah, Dad. Yeah. I'm going to be a famous actor. Oh, no, successful actor. That's what he said.
Ouch.
Well, that's good. That's the good kind.
Yeah.
So, all right. But, you know, he grew up in a house where his dad always worked. So I'm sure he's thinking, if that fucking ugly fat fuck can work all the time, this has got to be easy. Because Charlie's a good-looking kid. He's 6'4" and good looking, you know? And so,
yeah, I got one of those too. Aren't they annoying?
Yeah. I'm sure he's just like, come on. But I think it's going well for him. I really believe it can happen because he's really centered. He's clever. He's not trying to do comedy, but, you know, he can be funny, but in a different way than I am. Drier, you know?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
How old is he?
He's 19.
19? Yeah, mine's 19.
You know, it's the right town for it.
Yeah.
So I put him in acting classes for a year, professional acting classes, you know, 8 weeks at a time. And so he bounced around a bunch of different classes to, you know, test things out. And I was like, yeah, this isn't good enough. You gotta do this 5 days a week, honey. You can't just two days a week. So I made him take like a stage combat class. And then I was like, okay, now that's three, honey. We got to fill your week up. Either that or get a job. Let's go. He worked at a California Pizza Kitchen for a couple months. Oh, and then I got him a job as an extra on Superior Donuts, background extra.
Oh, yeah.
And he was already in the union because years ago with the Naked Trucker and T-Bone show, I had him play a little part.
Genius.
And then so I got him into the union, right? And I paid his union dues way back when. And then so he was a union background extra. And so he'd make $167 a day, right? And he worked 2 days a week. Why the fuck is he going to work at California Pizza Kitchen?
He
doesn't ask me. He just quits the job. He's like, hey, dude. So, but I want him to do that so he would understand the machinations of how it works. Like, this is a studio lot. This is how you get on. This is where you're going to park. You're not going to park where I park. You're going to walk over here. You're going to go to this. You're going to find the stage you're going to. You're going to find the person you're supposed to report to. Blah, blah. I just want him to know how these basics worked, right? Just the mechanics of it.
Wow.
So when you're there, you're like not freaked out. Like, what am I supposed to do? And so, you know, then I'd let him hang out in my room. Like, this is not where you'd be hanging out. You'd be hanging out with the extras, you know, doing all
I
that
think that's
shit.
Important to make sure
I
your son
so
knows.
Too. Yeah, yeah. So
he doesn't look like an asshole.
Yeah, well, yeah. Plus, he knows how things work and all that stuff. So anyway, I think he can do it.
That's a hell of an education.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And he's getting a different one than I even probably realized his whole life. He's watching, you know, something happen. And, you know, he's going to premieres with me when it's appropriate. And so he's been on red carpets. Mm-hmm. All my kids have. Wow. They've all been on red carpets when you go to family movies or premieres or you're in them. And so that's fun. They've been under that thing, you know. Like when I first went on a red carpet, it's like, oh, my God. Oh, shit, what do you do? Shit, my kids have already been on that. So to me, exposing them to show business is the same thing as exposing them to soccer or basketball or football or dance or whatever you're into. It's just another thing. So then they can choose what they're good at or what they really want to gravitate toward.
Was there a point when your kids realized you were famous?
Margo, when she was like 10 or 11, would be like, Dad, that person's looking at you. Go say hi. I'm like, no, honey, that's not how it works.
She wants you to go say hello to people?
Well, yeah.
Hi, my name is David Keck. Yeah. You may remember me.
Yes.
You may remember me from such things.
From Hannah, Montana. I think that's when, in public.
Did you do an episode of Hannah, Montana?
I did three.
I recall that. I wasn't going to bring it up, but I do recall that.
Well, I didn't know what it was. I had worked with a hairdresser, and his wife was a script supervisor on the show. And he told me, I forget what movie we were working on, but he said, hey, if your kids like that Hannah Montana show, I can get you tickets because my wife works on the show. I'm like, great. And so I called him and said, hey, my daughter wants to go watch the taping of the show. He goes, it is sold out for months because it's become so popular. But I can get you on the set on Thursday when they do pre-taping. I'm like, so much better because I didn't want to sit through 5 hours of some kids show. And so I go there and I'm like, where's the girl? Let's take some pictures. Let's get out of here. And the producers descended on me and are like, hey, we've been trying to get you on the show. But I'd left William Morris and went to CAA. Apparently they've been calling William Morris and they were not forwarding the information. Yeah. So I said, I'll do your show. You know, my daughter's into it. No one's ever going to see it. That's what I'm thinking, right? So it took like 2 months for something for them to write me into a show. And by then I kind of realized like, oh shit, this thing's become the Beatles. And so, it was fun for me to bring my kids down. My sister came out with her daughter who was a huge fan of the show. So for them, they got, you know, to come down, take a picture with a girl, meet her, all that stuff. That, to me, that's the fun shit. Like that, the same thing like when Margo was, 12. She's a big fan of the boys, One Direction.
Right.
And we were doing, Paul was hosting SNL. We were doing the promotional tour for Anchorman 2, and Paul was hosting, and One Direction was the host. I was like, oh, this is perfect.
Nailed it.
I'm sorry, the musical guest.
Right.
And so I we were doing the tour. I was already in New York. Paramount was so nice. They flew Margot out first class with my assistant. My wife was getting her master's in spiritual psychology, so she couldn't come. So they flew Margot out and my assistant, and then they put them up in a separate room. So nice. And then we're in a room not quite this big with Will, myself, Steve, and Paul, and the boys from One Direction, and I bring Margot in from my dressing room, and I have her stand in front of me, and we're rehearsing the opening bit, which is we're singing Afternoon Delight with right. the boys from One Direction, who could not have been nicer, these kids. So delightful. And we sat there and rehearsed for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, and Margot's there, right? And before they leave, I said, no, don't move, guys, don't move. We got to take a picture. And I'm like, okay, Zane, you had to move over here. And they all get it. Like, the girls sure. all have their favorite. Yeah. And like, okay. And so we took pictures, and then those guys leave. And then Margot's got tears in her eyes. And Will grabs her and goes, Margot, are those tears? It was, you know, just shit like that. So, you know, Margot's been in the room with One Direction, we're rehearsing. Well, Will Ferrell grabs her afterward, you know, and there's Steve Carell and Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
So, you know, shit like that is fun.
What a life.
Yeah.
Rarefied air, my friend.
That's the fun stuff about show business. Shit like that.
It is. And again, that's got to be like a really cool feeling.
Right.
Like, your kids are never going to go like, my dad's a dork.
Right. Right. Well, they could, of course they will. They roll their eyes.
But you're a dork that gets in the meet cool people.
Gets in the door. At the right places.
Please, I would have lost my mind as a kid. Not about One Direction. Maybe Will Ferrell touching me.
Well,
I would have been happy
what?
About.
It's fun to be. I forget what the movie was, but we took Charlie to the premiere. Gosh, I forget what it was. But I remember Will walking up the aisle before the movie started. He's like, hey, Charlie. And Charlie's like, hey, Will, shit like that to me is hysterical, you know? It's later as they get older, like, holy shit, I know this person and that person, that kind of stuff. So that's fun.
Awesome. Well, folks, what else can we say? We've had a great time today with Dave Koechner. Awesome show. Dave, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Is it Dave? Or, can I call you Dave or David?
I don't hear the difference.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great.
People say, what do they call you? My wife will go, they call you Dave. I'm like, okay.
Interesting.
But I don't get hung up on either one. I think most often they just say Koechner or hey you.
DK.
DK. Yeah.
DK. Cam, adequate job as usual.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Brian Ball. Yeah. Four more shows. Comedy at the Carlson. I would be amiss if I didn't mention the fact that Brian and I are going to be tag team hosting duties tonight. Brian's doing the first show. I'm doing the second show.
Is that right?
Show.
I didn't know that. Yes, yes. I can prove this.
Yeah. It's not getting in there.
I'll apologize ahead of time.
And you also have something in the Pickwick Room.
In the Pickwick Room.
As Harlan Williams would call it. Yeah. Hey, guy. Who's in the Pickwick Room?
That's such a good imitation.
Thank you.
I would have tried to do it, imitating it all day long now because of you.
But, I think anyone who hangs out with Harlan does an impression of Harlan.
Some people are so, like, big that it's hard not to get sucked into it.
Yeah.
So we'll see you next week, folks, when we'll be back with Brad Williams. Come to the shows this weekend, and don't forget, rate and review the show. We really appreciate it. Thank you. We'll see you next time. Thank you. I said thank you way too many times to get lost.